Fred Film Radio interview.
You're listening to Fred Film Radio, Benedicte Pro, covering for you the 20th edition of the Marrakesh Film Festival. And today we're talking to a friend of the festival who was tributed last year and who gave this morning a lovely conversation. Hello, Tilda.
Hello.
Can you tell us a bit more about the Marrakesh Film Festival and your relationship to that audience with whom you had a Q&A this morning?
I'm very fond of this festival. I've had the great honour to serve on the jury a couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago, I can't remember. The films were a revelation, as I know they are being now for the jury this year. There's something about the range of films that Marrakesh manages to catch in a way that other film festivals can't quite. And so being in Africa and feeling that scope is really inspiring. And as I've said before, the audience is really passionate about cinema and very, very educated around cinema and very much looking for new cinema. And that's always a wonderful thing for us filmmakers to come and be in dialogue with an audience like this. Is real. It's inspiring. I mean, it always pushes you on at a festival like this. You come, you see other people's films, and then you move on with new ideas of your own. It's very inspiring.
You have memories of another city here in Morocco. I'm thinking of Tangiers, where you shot Only Lovers Left Alive with Jim Jarmusch. Can you tell us a bit more about your relationship with this city, which has hosted throughout the years so many English-speaking artists?
Oh, I have such beautiful memories of Tangier. One of the things about my experience in Tangier is that we shot entirely at night. So my memories of Tangier, I have very few daytime memories of Tangier. My son, who's with me here, he was quite young, and we would be out all night ranging through the streets. And in that environment, you really feel the spirits of Paul Bowles, you know, they're all there. And there's that real kind of touch point in Tangier. There are other places like that, but Tangier really has it, where it feels like, I don't know, it feels like it hasn't changed. But how do I know? Because I wasn't there in the 60s. But it feels like it still has a kind of material resonance.
During the masterclass, clips were shown of your work that spanned throughout your career. How does it feel to see yourself on screen and see your early work and see the range of what you did?
It's a challenge it's something that I have come to, I won't say enjoy, because there's something quite confronting about looking back at your work. I try not to look back at my work, but these strange moments when you're asked to contextualize and sort of not defend your work but kind of give it a shape, I find it quite useful, because now I've been working for so long, it's over 30 years, and there's, I can see from a distance, it's like I'm away from the mountain and I can see the shape. And I can almost see, I see my young self, my young artist, and I see the development, and I see what I'm making now. Yeah. And the wonderful thing for me is that I see a real link between the youngest work and the most recent work. And so it's quite a moving thing for me.
Which makes me think of The Eternal Daughter by Joanna Hogg, where you play a daughter and a mother, and it's like also about double takes. Do you think that reflects the point where you are in your life and your career?
I think that's well put. I mean, it's really an extraordinary and very powerful feeling, having made work for over 30 years, to make a film. This is the last film that I made, I mean, apart from The End, which is coming, and it feels very, very close to the first films I made. And that is, for me, that's a good thing. I mean, you could say I haven't progressed, okay? But I started in a very powerful place, and I feel good about reconnecting with that powerful place. It's about autobiography. It's about working with extremely close relationships. It's about improvising, which, as I said in the masterclass, draws on my capacities as a writer. And it just feels authentic and relaxed. And honestly, it's not about interpreting anything that anybody else, it's not someone else's agenda. And that's meaningful to me. And that's another reason why I feel embarrassed to describe myself as an actor, because I'm not really interested in interpreting.
I really liked how you described the beginning of a career within this collective co-authored practice, and that it was certainly provocative or confronting, but that you felt that commercial cinema was more experimental to you compared to that.
Yes, well, it's really true. It always felt my sort of base is a kind of, well, almost familial experience, and so to go outside of that is the step. That's the risk. You know, that takes more what they call bravery, because you know this. You might have the connection with the filmmaker, but the great, you know, the paraphernalia of a studio or even a different culture, because there's no, you know, I think, you know, film culture is pretty steady. But to go, for example, the few times that I've worked in the studio system, I've been in America, and America is a very foreign place for me. And so to go into that kind of world has always been a bit of a step.
You mentioned earlier that you never thought you were going to be in a Bellator movie. Bellator famously announced he was retiring from making movies. It was just announced that at the European Film Awards he's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. Did you discuss that with him, why you were stopping making movies?
I'm privileged to say that I count Bella as a friend. Before I met him, I was an enormously fervent admirer of his work. He's really one of the greats, and I don't mean he's one of the greats in his own skin, in the world of his films, but I think he has really informed cinema for younger generations. The way in which he takes time and the way in which he works with a kind of energy is really influential for now maybe two or three generations of filmmakers. So his influence is really radical.
We shall discover soon a project which you did with Joshua Oppenheimer, his first fiction, and it's a musical, which is very intriguing because we have never seen you in a musical.
We shot it this year and it's being edited now. We're just sort of putting it together, and I don't know when you'll see it, but let's say next year. And yes, it's called The End, and it's about the end of the world. It's about the last family. Let's say one of the richest men in America, maybe on the planet, who has been an ecological, like, rapist, and has brought about a kind of ecological disaster above. So it's not diseases, but it's, you know, he's wrecked the climate. He was a oil man. He was one of those frackers. And he and his family have lived underground for 25 years in a bunker like Versailles. And it's a musical. And we sing.
So you sing?
Yeah. I can't say any more about it, but it's intriguing. It's intriguing. And he's a very, very interesting person, Joshua Oppenheimer.
Is it true that you have a project as a director about education in school? I think it's a collective project with the Derek Darman Lab, where you're credited as a director.
Well, it's true that it's a film that we're just completing now. I think probably the best way to describe it is it's an essay film. It's just a series of questions and wonderings about learning, actually, more than education. It's about our capacity to learn, and it's set aside machine learning, and we say at the beginning you've got a lot of questions and not many answers, but it's just a little reverie about learning. And I made it, it's true that my name is on it as director, but I made it in this collective. We call ourselves the Derek Jarman Lab, and we came out of the University of Birkbeck, and we made a couple of films before. We made a film called The Seasons in Cowsey about John Berger, which was a different kind of essay film. But we like to play with this form. And I hope that will appear at some point next year.
What you said this morning about contributing, wanting to contribute to the frame rather than feeling like an actor and being as important maybe as a chair or something else, would be in the line of being part of something.
Yes, always being part of something. I think there's one of the reasons I always feel a little alienated when I hear what I call real actors talking about their work is that they very properly have a sense of their own work within the group, and I don't really. I'm not I my work is to stay connected. It's not, it doesn't live in me. It's entirely about the connection with others.
I really liked what you said this morning about the younger public and the fact that there is no less snobbery. It's more open.
I mean, I've never been a cinema snob. I mean, I loved some of my early great loves. I think one of my first film experiences that I loved was Herbie Rides Again, and I always remember, you know, telling people that and then being very amused in a slightly superior way. But for me, it was really, as a child, it was something really important, and I think that we can't waste cinema's capacity to touch, and all sorts of sizes and shapes of cinema can have the capacity to touch. We can be alienated by the most highfalutin, most intellectual cinema, just as we can be alienated by some massive blockbuster. But we can be touched by a massive blockbuster too. This is the thing. It's possible to have that connection. And I think younger audiences, in my observation, are more able to hold the great span of cinema. Maybe they just have the capacity to see more of it. Maybe they can, you know, thanks to places like MUBI and Criterion and all sorts of really inspired streaming services, they are actually falling in love with cinema more and more. But I think that breadth is really important for a cineast.
Thank you so much, Dilda.
Thank you.
Fred, 24/7 on Fred FM and smartphone app.